You're listening to Leafs Lunch with Julia Tucheri and Michael DeStefano on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
And that's when I think in my eyes, that's who I see as, you know, the best of going. I'm just past couple of years. Obviously, McDavid, Austin, and a couple of the guys have been really taken to another level as well. But just Crosby overall, I mean, that's a guy I've always watched growing up. It was always a guy you wanted to be on the ice against, play against, if you're lucky enough. And it's always a cool one when you get to line up against them. And
we can confirm that with our eyes right now, Luca. Sidney Crosby on the ice right now at Scotiabank Arena for morning skate. And we are here in the rafters. It's Julie Tucheri and Luca Celebre today. We also have our pal Chris Johnston with us for the first 20 or so minutes of the show. The Leafs have the Penguins tonight at Scotiabank Arena. That's a game you can hear on TSN 1050. Watch it on TSN 4. A lot going on tonight. It's the Hall of Fame game. It should be really exciting. So, CJ, I'll put the question to you first. What's the plan tonight at Scotiabank for all the Hall of Fame celebrations?
Yeah, a lot going on. I got to say, this is actually personally one of my favorite weekends of every single year.
It's a buzz in the city, eh?
It's crazy. I mean, if you're involved in the hockey scene, a lot of people obviously travel in from various parts of the hockey world, depending on which players are being inducted at the Hall of Fame. You get a couple games. You get the ceremony we're going to get to tonight. And then Monday, of course, the Hall of Fame celebrations. This is as good as it gets if you're a hockey nerd, which I count myself in that grouping. And so, you know, tonight, it's sort of the Hockey Hall of Fame's night. And so any of the honored members that are here in the city will be honored before the game. We expect that to include Boreas Alming, who's obviously pretty special, that he's been able to make the trip to Toronto with his family from Sweden, given his current battle with ALS and his declining health, so I think that should be pretty special. The Leafs are hoping to honor Boria as well tomorrow night during the game against Vancouver, kind of all of his own, sort of apart from the Hall of Fame ceremonies. We'll see if his health allows him to do that, but there's all kinds of different angles you can go on. We could talk about the current team. We can talk about the guys going to the Hall, and really just a special weekend in Toronto, and it's finally feels like normal again because COVID to various degrees has interrupted this the last couple of years.
Yeah, COVID kind of gave us a head fake on a regular season last year, but this year it feels like the real thing. You've been doing a lot of reporting on Boreas Alming and him getting to Toronto. How do you think that reception is going to be like from Toronto fans? He's so beloved here.
Well, I hope they blow the roof off.
Yeah.
You know, and look, yeah. We know the reputation of this building, not the loudest in the league, but I hope everyone recognizes what a special moment this is. You know, look, I'm older than you guys, and Boreas Alming played before my time. Like, I don't remember him as a player. I've been lucky enough to be around him in the years since because he's done a lot of things with the NHL and with the Leafs, and so sort of come to know him a little bit socially that way and have nothing but respect for him. But, you know, he was one of the first real European players to play in the NHL. He was probably the first European star player in the NHL. He's one of, you know, as we sit here today, one of only four Swedish-born players in the Hockey Hall of Fame. We're adding three more on Monday. So that number is ballooning, and there'll be, you know, subsequent years, Henrik Lundqvist and these other guys will go in as well. But, you know, he's a pioneer for European players. But, you know, for you talk to people that grew up in the 70s or the 80s around the GTA that were Leafs fans. I mean, he was the beacon. He was one of the stars. And so in addition to being a great man, he was a proud Leaf. He spent all but one season in the NHL with the Leafs. He finished in Detroit for a year. But I just think given what he's meant, and I mean, look, it's a terrible battle he's in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got his ALS diagnosis officially in July, and he's already lost the ability to speak. I mean, it's almost hard to put your mind around it and see some of the videos that, you know, him and his family have been very brave, I think we should say, and being very open about what he's gone through, you know, in an effort to raise funds back in Sweden for a foundation he started for ALS. But I think that he's making, him and his family have made a powerful decision to, you know, have this play out publicly because he is such a public figure. And so given everything colliding here for tonight and especially tomorrow when he's honored on his own, as we hope he's able to do health-wise, I hope the fans give him a proper send-off and a proper salute because, you know, his kids have come to Toronto. He's got four kids here, and his wife, Pia, are all in the city. And, you know, this is a really special moment.
You mentioned him being that pioneer for European players, and obviously Rasmus Sandin, Timothy Liljegren come to mind when you think of this Leafs roster. I guess what's the talk been around the team with him in town, and have they said anything about it, the players, and just how they're feeling, especially those guys?
Yeah, a cool story from Rasmus Sandin this morning. He said when he was drafted by the Leafs in 2018 that Borja actually reached out to him and set up a lunch in Stockholm, and you know, he had a quip. He said, "Boy, I warned him to watch out for the Toronto media." So probably pretty good advice. But you know,
yeah,
Rasmus and his dad Patrick actually went to that lunch. And if you go to Patrick Sandin's Twitter page, at the top is a picture of the three of them from that day. I mean, you know, Borja had I think a especially strong impact on the Swedish players. You know, I actually wrote a story in the Toronto Star a week or so ago. I spoke with Niklas Lidström, and you know, for Niklas, Borja was his hero, and you know, obviously he's went on and won 7 Norris trophies, made quite an impact over there, and you know, Niklas has actually joined Borja's foundation in Sweden. He's on the board of directors of that, and he spoke just glowingly about, you know, what this man meant to him, and he actually told a story where he first came to know Borja, and this will be a little bit of a history lesson for listeners of a certain age out there, but Borja played a game at Maple Leaf Gardens for Team Sweden during the 1976 Canada Cup, and he was obviously going to play, he was on the visiting team in a
yeah,
international competition, and it was such a long-standing ovation. It was longer than anything Bobby Orr or any of the Canadian
wow,
players on the other side got, because there was so much respect in Toronto for Borja. And that made such news back in Sweden that was where Niklas Lidström first heard of Borja Salming. And so, you know, we're talking about a different era and all this stuff, but there's just something, like, I have goosebumps just thinking about that. I mean, I hope a similar standing ovation can happen this weekend. I really do. I think that this is a really special man and just a unique time, the way everything's coming together. And, you know, I'm beating a dead horse here, but if you're coming to the game, please, even if he's before your time, take a moment to consider what this means and what a moment we have on our hands.
No, you're right. It's going to be really special, a collision of a whole bunch of things happening on one weekend. We're with our TSN Hockey Insider, Chris Johnson, right now. Alfredsson, the Sedins, Luongo, also going into the Hall of Fame on Monday night. Anything specifically from your time covering those guys that sticks out to you?
Oh, man.
I mean,
there's not a lot of good things about getting older, but I'll say one of them is it's pretty cool when the players that are going into the Hall of Fame are players you interacted with throughout your own career. I mean, I have kind of a different perspective on this. I mean, the Hall of Fame classes of 10 years ago that I was covering as a reporter, I mean, those were stars when I was a kid. Well, you know, whereas, you know, each of those players you mentioned, I had actual personal interactions with and have known over my time covering the NHL. I mean, really 4 of the finest gentlemen that I've come across, you know, on my side of the microphone in the sort of journalist-player relationship. You know, one thing I remember about the Sedins, just a personal memory, is that 2011 Stanley Cup final with Boston. The games in Boston all went horribly for Vancouver. Like, they lost one of them like 8-1, weirdly. Just for some reason, the games at TD Garden were terrible for the Canucks in that series. And I remember being one of the reporters in the Canucks room after that 8-1 game, and it was only the two Sedins, and they were just mobbed, and they just stood there for like 40 minutes answering questions. I mean, just even in the worst moments, they were always there for the team. Obviously, I think if you speak from a hockey standpoint, they played the game in a way, you know, they kind of developed what we might call the modern cycle game. I mean, the way that they obviously had a second sense for where each other was going to be, and we can harp on the fact they're twins, and there's almost something that you can't explain there. But I think they actually pioneered a style of play, those Canucks teams of that era that most, you know, what we quality teams today want to emulate. It's sort of a simple thought, but at the time this wasn't the way the game was played. It's basically control the puck in the offensive zone as much as you can. You know, anyone who grew up in the 80s might remember, you know, dump it in and go chase it down.
Yeah.
I mean, but the Sedins were pioneers in possessing it. You know, Roberto Luongo, one of the funniest, most honest people you can remember. I remember that trade deadline where he was supposed to get traded to the Leafs and it didn't happen, and he came off the ice and he said, "My contract sucks," which was true, because it was a cap-related reason that trade, you know, primarily couldn't come through at the time.
Yeah.
Just an honest gem of a guy, and I think a lot of people have come to appreciate that because of his Twitter account, Strombone1.
Yeah.
that he's since owned
so
up
funny.
To.
Pretty legendary.
We're going to have Noodles on a little bit later. I don't know if you've seen this in the archives. If you haven't, I will send it to you later. We have to bring it up with him. The intern, the panel intern, it's a skit from 9 years ago
yeah.
with Duthie, Luongo, and Noodles, and it's I was splitting a gut at it last night. It was the funniest thing.
I've got to watch that because I don't remember it. I'm sure I saw it at the time.
Multiple times he said, "My contract sucks," and Noodles in his face saying, "My contract sucks." I just, it's the most hilarious thing in the world.
Not a lot of hockey players, it seems like, would have the fun with that. And the fact that he did, like you said, just kind of characterizes who he is as a person and just how much fun he had and the personality he was.
Well, not everyone's comfortable being that open and honest, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
totally.
There's like some people want to keep their business to themselves, and Roberto was sort of,
especially that too.
Yeah, exactly. Could have some fun with it in a sense. I'm sure it wasn't fun when he first said those words. He was very frustrated he didn't get traded. I didn't even touch on Daniel Alfredson, who I probably spent the most time around. You know, being a Toronto-based reporter, lots of games with Ottawa. My first ever game up here in the press box as a student intern at the Canadian Press at the time was in the 2002 playoffs.
Wow.
And it was the game actually where Alfredson hit Tucker from behind game 5 of that series.
Oh my goodness.
And scored the winning goal. And I've actually since once had an adult beverage with Daniel, and we lived that night, and he was telling me that was like his favorite moment of his whole career, because he really embraced being a villain in Toronto at the time. I mean, and he's really a gem of a guy, but you know, when two teams play interprovincial rivalry, but they play 4 straight years or 4 out of 5 years or whatever it was, 4 times in quick succession in the playoffs, there's going to be some bad blood there.
Yeah, that's why I'm interested to see the reception for him specifically tonight in this building.
He'll probably get some boos.
Say, do you think he wants that too, knowing that he loved being the villain here? He probably wants to hear the boos.
I know it won't bother him one bit.
Yeah.
It's not going to ruin his weekend. Like he's, because he know, I mean, look at it. It was pretty, like, it's funny because time fades away, all the emotions are out, but it was an emotional thing. And, like, that night in particular, the Leafs went down 3-2 with that loss in that game. They actually came back and won the series. But, you know, Curtis Joseph was about to be a free agent. And, like, it was all this great Leaf team felt like it was coming apart at the edges at the hands of this dastardly guy from Ottawa. So, you know, anyway, Elvie's a gem of a guy, too. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a really special class that way. And it's kind of cool that it's 3 Swedes. You know,
yeah.
I mean, imagine that country for all they've accomplished. Only have 4 players today, and they're going to have 7 as of Monday in the hall. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, very cool. We had Eddie Lack on yesterday. He was jammed up about it as well. We're with our TSN Hockey Insider, Chris Johnson, right now at Scotiabank Arena. It's a Leafs game day. They've got the Penguins tonight at home. You can catch that game here on TSN 1050 or on TSN 4. It's Hall of Fame weekend. But we'll get to the current Leafs roster right now. Darren Dreger was on First Up this morning. He said he's not sure that Matt Murray will be in between the pipes on Saturday. Doesn't sound like anyone is sure. What's your read on the situation right now?
Well, that sounds like Keith Petrozelli's music then, doesn't
right?
it, for Saturday? I mean, it could be I mean, how cool is that? You might have this player that, you know, I know we've got a lot of hardcore Leaf fans out there that are probably tracking what he was doing with the Marlies, but a player, by and large, the average fan hasn't heard of might be making his NHL debut between the Leafs pipes. And what would that be? That would be 4 different goalies they've used this year?
This
5?
Season, yeah.
We're not even 20 games in.
Man, I mean, crazy the way these things go. You know, I think that, look, let's look at Matt Murray's history. It behooves no one at this point in the season to force him in. If there's any hesitancy there, I know he's been doing a ton of on-ice work lately, but he was, you know, he's been off for a month, right? And didn't really get his feet under him, you know, early in the season before getting injured. So I think it probably makes sense to exercise some caution. You know, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm certainly not going to contradict my compadre and Darren Dreger. I'm sure if he's reporting that's pretty accurate. I don't have any specific info on who's starting tomorrow. But, you know, I think the fact that Murray was on, I think, for an hour after yesterday's practice, it just suggests that they're still doing a lot of work. It doesn't suggest starting Saturday, put it that way. I mean, usually when someone's doing that degree of extra work, it's still working on conditioning and those types of things. And so maybe it's next week for him. And, I mean, that'll be a pretty cool experience for Keith Petrozelli if he does make his NHL debut tomorrow.
And if he does, I think this Leafs team has just played a lot better recently. They've kind of quieted the world is on fire panic that was amongst fans and media members here. And the players seem to have too, like Mitch Marner, 7-game point streak. Matthews has got more goals in his last 4 games than he did in the first 9. So what do you make of those guys? And are they starting to get their mojo back, so to speak, and be the players that we all think of?
Yeah, it looks that way, but I still, like, they're still not a 5-on-5 where we're used to seeing them.
Right.
And I don't know that that's necessarily a problem. Like, I just think you have enough track record here that they have earned a bit of patience, both from the coaching staff, maybe from media members. I mean, fans, I'm not going to tell the fans what to do.
Yeah.
But, like, the point is that it's not, I don't believe that they've lost their talent or ability or drive or any of those things. Mm-hmm. It just seems like it's not working. I mean, to me, there's still merit in potentially splitting them up for a period of time. We saw them do that in Carolina last weekend. I thought it worked well. you know, I know those guys want to play together, and I think when all is said and done this season, they will have played most of the games together, but maybe a stretch apart isn't the worst thing. But it is a good sign that they're producing again, because that's how I viewed the start of the season. It's like, okay, you know, Matthews had, what, two goals in
two
10
and,
games?
Two and nine, yeah. Nine.
Like, it's like, this is not going to last. And so let's really judge. You know, I did the math. There was a point where 28 teams had played, their two top scorers had more points than Marner and Matthews. And I was like, okay, that's not going to last. Like, just as long as these guys are healthy for 80% of the season, they're going to be a top five duo in the league. And I still would stick to that. And so I don't think they're fully back there yet, but it's trending in the right direction. I think some confidence comes when they see the puck go in. You know, for Marner specifically, it just seems like something's a little degree off, right? We haven't seen him be such a primary assist driver the way he normally is. And, you know, I don't know what that is. I think some of it is this is just a crazy game, man. It's rubber on ice, right? Like, weird things happen, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the not so good. But I think over time, the cream rises to the crop, and those guys are the cream.
Yeah, we feel confident, I think, too, that Matthews and Marner will end up, when it's all said and done, play most of the games together this season. You think Michael Bunting finds his way back to the top line?
That's a more open question for me. And it worked so well last year. Like, you just think, like, why wouldn't that be the same, right? Like,
why
they
not?
Spent time in Arizona in the summer together. Like, it's clear they like each other, played some tennis.
They got their little doodles on their gloves.
Like, they wanted to work, right? Like, my point is, I think they love legitimately playing together. They had all kinds of success. Michael Bunting had, what, like, something like 58 5-on-5 points last year.
It was nuts.
I'm pretty sure it was almost tied with
McDavid. AB's favorite more.
There you
or
go.
Or was it the same? It's AB's favorite stat. I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, he brought that
He's
up
gonna
all
text
the time.
Me and yell about this.
Well, if AB wasn't taking time off right now, we'd have some clarity.
Slacking. So. He's only doing like three radio shows today.
Well, come on. Hit for the cycle, man. You can do it for it. But in all seriousness, it worked so well. There's no reason that shouldn't have been the case. And yet, it didn't happen. And it's a tough thing for Michael Bunting, right? This is a contract year for him. I mean, we have to remember, like, normal human emotions come into this. Like, he's under the gun a little bit. I think there were some people saying, okay, great year. Can you do it again? Right? That question, I'm sure, is to some degree in his own mind. And I'm sure he has self-belief, of course, to get this far in his life and his career. But, you know, you don't know yourself. And so the fact that he's down a lineup, this is a real test, I would think, because he loses his opportunity. He loses those guys that put the puck in the net and get him those assists when he just passes once over.
Yeah.
You know, the way you and I might hope to get assists if we could play that, in that spot in the Leafs top line. But, you know, I'm not as sure that he'll be back there, quite honestly. I mean, I don't see a ton of other options, quite frankly, on the way the Leafs are built right now. So I have to think it'll happen eventually, but that's less of a guarantee to me than the fact that Marner and Matthews will be two-thirds of that top line.
Joined by TSN hockey insider Chris Johnston, we're here at Scotiabank ahead of Leafs and Penguins. Let's talk about Jack Eichel a little bit, because that electric performance last night, like, the hat trick's one thing, but he just bit of the Alfredson, like, villainry, where he waved at the crowd after the hat-trick goal. I think a lot of people crowned the Sabres really early after the trade last year when they were talking about the immediate results and Eichel and the Golden Knights struggling. But when we look at Vegas' season and how important Eichel's been, just revisiting that trade, do you have some different thoughts now that you see this season of it?
I'm actually happy for Jack Eichel on a personal level, and it's because of this. He had to fight to get the kind of treatment for an injury that he wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you and I, we can't, I can't even put myself in his shoes, but imagine that essentially when you're under contract to an NHL team, you don't have full say in what happens to your own body. And you know, he did a lot of research into the specific neck procedure he had. The Sabres wanted to get a fusion done. Ultimately, it led him out the door in Buffalo because the Sabres just weren't going to take what they deemed to be a risk because, it, you know, had he suffered, if he didn't come back from that surgery, they'd still have to, they'd be on the hook to pay on that whole contract. And so to see him come through, be healthy, and having moments like this, I mean, I think I have a lot of respect for that. And it reminds me a little bit of Eric Lindros, you know, way back when. He went to, you know, him and his family battled the Flyers to get specific treatment at the time that we now just consider normal for concussion treatment because, you know, he's got to take his own sort of body and circumstances into his own hands. And so that's what stands out to me. Like, it's that was such a cool thing to see how excited he was. I love that he's leaning in to being the heel. I mean, look, he got booed relentlessly, first of all, when he was back there last March, and then through two periods of that game last night, he had no points.
He didn't even have to be touching the puck. He just had to get on the ice and they were booing.
Right. And look, it, this is sports. This is entertainment. This is fun.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I have no problem with the Sabres fans. Like, if you're a Sabres fan, maybe you feel a little whatever about Jack Eichel, and that's fine. But I love him leaning into it, and then he has the big third period, and you see the way his teammates gravitate around it. Like, I mean, to me, this is this. Like, Mark Stone has played, what, 600 NHL games, and he was saying it was like the coolest regular season game he's been part of. So
that's awesome.
I mean, it just tells, because let's face it, a lot of games are games. A lot of nights in November just whip by, and you can't really remember what happened. But, you know, I'm going to remember that. Jack Eichel, of course, and his family's going to remember that for the rest of his career, no matter what happens. And it was, I think that's a moment of, like, he's back, and he, it was worth all that he had to go through to get back to the spot in his career.
Yeah, I'm into villainry. I'm into the dramatics of it all. That was a very good moment. I think hockey needs more of that.
Who's the biggest villain on the ice tonight?
Goodness. Who do you think? You have somebody pegged?
No, I don't. That's the thing. I don't think we have a villain in this game, if we're being honest. I mean, like, no. I mean, the Penguins, maybe Brian Burke.
I'm down in the stands, like, fangirling over Sidney Crosby. He can't be the villain here.
No.
Nick Robertson's going on about his Sidney Crosby fandom. I don't know if there's a villain on this ice. It'd be cool if they, the Leafs had one, though. They have their pest in Michael Bunting, their greasy rat, if you're Curtis Gabriel, depending on the moniker. But not really a villain, eh?
No, we don't have one in this game. So maybe tomorrow night we'll find one.
I don't know how to transition from villains into Jack Campbell, but I know that there's a way to
do it.
Well,
he's the opposite of the villain, right?
Somehow.
Everyone loves Jack Campbell.
He's so beloved in this market.
You have a cold, dark heart if you don't find some love for Jack Campbell.
It's so true.
I have love for Jack Campbell. The start is bad, CJ. We'll ask Noodles more about Jack Campbell specifically, but how do you think Ken Holland is feeling right now? Do you think he's more disappointed in Jack Campbell's performance thus far, or do you think he's not getting much help from the team in front of him defensively? Because they're scoring well, but they have like the second most giveaways in the league behind Montreal.
I think he's worried.
Right.
If I'm being honest. I mean, look, it's a five-year deal. So no one will probably remember the first month too much if Jack Campbell goes on and plays great for 4 and 11, you know, whatever. For the rest of this contract, it will be a footnote. But you want to start this kind of relationship on the right foot, and it hasn't happened. And so I definitely think in the Oilers organization, they're asking, or probably more pressingly, like, what can we do to make him more comfortable? Like, what can we control here to make this go better? Because they don't have an escape hatch in this contract, right? This is a commitment, and they thought it was going to solve a problem, and it's created a new problem. So, you know, It's fascinating how these things go. For all the commentary on the Leafs' decisions last summer,
oh,
and the goalies,
yeah,
and this and that, I mean, we don't need to relitigate everything yet, because I do think it's early to say this or that. But I think if you reflect on the Leafs' decision, they were worried about 5 years almost for anybody. That 5 years for a goaltender is an incredibly risky time period on a contract. That was what the market was going to demand for Jack Campbell, and they chose to move on. Now Edmonton's like, oh, man, we're strapped into this for 5 years, and this might be a disaster.
Yeah.
And so I would say this. We've seen Jack Campbell have hot enough stretches and poor stretches and then hot stretches on the other side that you're just hoping he captures that, and that's all this is. But, yeah, there's no way the Oilers are just, you know, sloughing this off and saying, like, I there's genuine concern there. I can tell you that.
There should be.
Yeah.
There should be. And I know a lot of fans are calling for Stuart Skinner maybe too, because he's looked better than Campbell has and obviously limited minutes, but he's looked good.
He has. And what's funny is now you can put the spin on it, because they're only paying Stuart Skinner league minimum.
Yeah.
So they're actually only paying $5.75 million for their two goalies, which is, I think, 22nd in the league. So they actually, they're paying less for their tandem than most teams in the league.
But I like the positive angle.
Well, I've seen some people are trotting that out. So it's like, works, I mean, they're still actually okay. But, I mean, let's face it. The guy you're paying $5 million, at some point you need him to be coming up big for you and being a difference maker. They didn't pay him, you know, they've been going cheaper with Mike Smith and in the last few years. Like, this was meant to solidify the problem. And it brings me no joy because, as I said off the top there, but your question on Jack Campbell, I mean, just a first-class guy, and I know he's got a lot of fans left over in this city and basically everywhere he's played. I think he's left a stream of people that are rooting for him. But, you know, it's been a tough start, and he's so hard on himself. I think that's what stands out to me knowing him, is he's so hard on himself. And so when he gets in this down cycle, like he's calling his own game pathetic and stuff like this, like it's almost a snowball in the wrong direction. And so I think the Oilers need to somehow get an intervention, clear out his mind, just get him back to being him, because, you know, he's played 920, he played like 918 for the Leafs over 75 games or something at one point. So, like, he's put it together, but he's got to get there quickly because there's a lot of pressure building.
Yeah, so last year he was working with Greg Harden quite a bit with the Leafs, right?
Right.
Do you think that helped quite a bit for him? I noticed that Greg Hardin is actually no longer listed on the Leafs staff page either. Do you think that was really helpful for him last year?
It seemed like it. You know, I didn't talk to Jack specifically about that. What's funny is one of the other media snoops was telling me that Greg Hardin was recently spotted back around the Leafs. I don't know his status. I mean, that Leafs who works for the team page is fascinating. Like, names appear and disappear. There's no announcements.
Very sneaky.
We don't really know there's not full visibility on what's going on, but, you know, he was recently spotted there. But obviously this organization employs hundreds of people. So a lot of faces come and go more than in other cities.
Yeah. Well, CJ, thank you so much for joining us, taking the time. It's great to do a real life lunch date.
Oh man, I messed up the fist bump.
I went for a fist bump and he went for a high five. But it was a successful hit nonetheless. Thank you so much, CJ.
Yeah, love it. We'll see you next Friday.
Thank you. All right, we'll catch you guys back on the other side. Right now, you're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050 and the iHeartRadio app.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
You know, I just feel very privileged to be able to play this game. And, it was just a great... You know, it was a great team win for us, and you know, we had a good road trip, and so I just been enjoying playing hockey this year and trying to make the most of every night.
Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leafsbusters.com. That was Jack Eichel. He had a crazy night. It was just one of the craziest things I've ever seen. To update, we'll get into that in a second. To update you all, we're at Scotiabank Arena right now. If you're hearing the background noise, the Pittsburgh Penguins are currently on the ice partaking in their morning skate. Pens have the Leafs tonight in the Hall of Fame game. You can catch that game here on TSN 1050. Watch it on TSN4. Should be a great weekend. We just were talking about it with Chris Johnson, how great of a weekend this whole Hall of Fame thing is going to be. But talk about Hall of Fame revenge games. Jack Eichel gave it to the crowd in Buffalo on the point sheet, physically, with his body language. I don't know. Were you expecting that from him?
I mean, I guess we should have been based on what he said last March when he came back for the first time and the crowd booing and like his iconic post-game line after. But
yeah,
it was pretty extreme. I loved it.
I know. I don't think we get enough of that in hockey. Like, I think Claude Giroux is going to go back to Philly tomorrow night. And it won't be the same thing. It was a different way that they parted ways, of course. But you just don't see this very often in hockey. And I didn't think that he was going to be so forward last night, mostly because of what he said before the game. He said, whatever he said after the game, he said something along the lines of, and this was last year in March, something along the lines of, I've never heard this building so loud.
Yeah.
When they were booing him. And then he was asked about that prior to yesterday's game, and he said, I don't know why, I probably shouldn't have done that last year, and maybe he was a little surprised by the reception. He said he was like anyone else, he's a human being, it was emotional, and maybe he was a little hurt. So then, before the game, I'm kind of feeling bad for him. I'm thinking, okay, he just had a moment. Sometimes we all have our little snap shows.
Of course.
And maybe he was genuinely hurt by the reception because it was a bad breakup. He did want to be in Buffalo. They wouldn't let him get the treatment that he wanted. It was a messy breakup. It didn't sound like he had anything against the city of Buffalo or the fans or anything like that. But then they booed him relentlessly every time he stepped on the ice, and everything that he said prior to the game just kind of went in the wash.
It's so funny. It took just a 3-hour window where it was like, oh yeah, you didn't mean any of that. You may have meant it before, but you didn't mean any of that now.
No.
And also too, like, CJ brought up a great point when we were talking to him about it. The part of this where it's like he wanted out of Buffalo, but the surgery part of this where they wanted him to get one and he wanted another one, like, that's something that we don't see. Like, that's a unique situation that leads to a player of his caliber getting traded. And I don't want to call it mistrust in doctors, but it's more just like two different medical opinions, and you want to go with the one that you want to go to because you know your body. And so that adds like an extra layer to this. It's not just like he wanted out of Buffalo and he's sticking it to them now. It's like he wanted this thing that could alter his life and was risky, and he did it, and now he's thriving, and he's just like, yeah, I'll let you know how much I'm thriving. My team is 2 losses this year. Like, Vegas is looking like the team we thought they were going to be last year, and now they're, what, Stanley Cup favorites again? Like, they got to be in the conversation.
Everyone that we've talked to oh, I forget who we had on earlier this week, but pointed to them as, I think, oh, it was Gord Miller. He pointed to them and said, I think that this is the best team in the NHL right now. Did you expect this from them this season, such a resurgence? I expected them to be a playoff team,
mm-hmm.
because last year was just, it was kind of a sham with all the injuries and everything that happened in Vegas last year. Just kind of seemed like a fluke. I felt like they were going to be a playoff team, but I don't know if I expected the level of dominance that we've seen from them thus far.
Yeah, I don't know if I did either, and I think in large part because they're goaltending, right? Like,
yeah.
Logan Thompson, Aiden Hill, those are the two goaltenders they're walking into the season with, and we're just like...
Have I told you I covered Logan Thompson when he played in the OUA?
No, you didn't.
MJ said something hilarious on the Leafs broadcast the other night when they were playing Vegas. He was like, and you wouldn't know this guy. I was almost going to text MJ. He said something like, you wouldn't know this guy unless he covered the Brock Badgers in the OUA. And I was like, you know what? I might text MJ and say, I actually did that, MJ.
That's wild.
Isn't that weird?
What?
Yeah.
And would you have seen this coming from Logan Thompson when you covered him with the Brock Badgers?
Not in the NHL, but I thought, I don't know. I guess when you watch OUA hockey, you
it's
think those
right?
top-end players end up with like an AHL contract, and then if something cool happens, maybe they wind up getting a game or two. Or they have a successful Europe career or something like that. He was an excellent goalie. He was by far the best goalie in the league. But I don't know if I saw him starting for the Vegas Golden Knights and really thriving in the NHL.
Right? Like, he's probably got to be rookie Calder front runner at this point. Because,
yeah.
I mean, Matty Beniers is playing well in Seattle. But, I don't know, if you're the number one goalie on the first place team in the league right now, and if he just continues to kind of carry them through, like if they make the playoffs and he's the starter, he's got to be the Calder favorite,
you're
which
right.
is crazy. But
I wonder what the odds are on that right now.
I don't know.
Poked around.
The NHL doesn't have like comeback player of the year like the NFL does, because I feel like Jack Eichel would also be the front runner for that. Where I'm just like,
yeah, I don't
coming
know
back from
Eric
a
Carlson could make a
Carlson's a good one too. Actually, never mind.
But
I
don't
take
know
it
if
back.
Jack Eichel like. With the surgery and all the development time he missed, it's such a pivotal point in his career. Like, you really get good around the age that Jack Eichel was unable to play at. That's when guys really seem to come into their own.
It's true.
It doesn't look like he missed a step now.
Was there a conversation, too, of like, wow, maybe this guy's kind of a bust? Like,
yes.
Second overall pick?
Yes.
Like, you're looking at his numbers in Buffalo, and he never really... Like, he had some good years, but maybe never what we were expecting from... The guy that went after Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
And obviously that alone is enough to put so much pressure on your own shoulders. But there was that conversation too, which is an interesting part of all of this new character arc for him, so to speak.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for him. And if I was him, like, I feel like I've got a little villain in me. I would have waved to the crowd after that hat trick too, like, see you later. I don't have to come back here until next year, and this is the show I put on for you guys. So watch me in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, definitely the best revenge game I have in my mind in recent memory. But then we were shooting it back and forth. Like, what are some revenge games that stick out to you?
So we came up with a few, and I mean, when you're talking Leaf-centric, the one that immediately came to my mind, and it was JT against the Islanders, but it was weird because it was like,
Don't need you.
It was that, and it was the third game of the season he played against that franchise that had drafted him and he played with forever. And the first two games that he played against them that season, no points, no goals. And the last one, he finally gets a goal on Long Island. So I guess that's like kind
decent.
Of a revenge.
You know what's funny?
It's not really great. It's more just the Islanders fans blew that one up so much with the chants and
nuts.
The snakes and the
videos,
pajama boy.
The music video? The fully produced music video?
It was hilarious.
I don't know who did that.
One of the cringiest things I've ever seen.
But I, you know what's funny is yesterday that video came up on my timeline of the Islanders. Have you seen this? The Islanders fans sitting next to the penalty box in Long Island. Screaming at JT, you're a liar, you're a fake, and you're a phony, and you should have told us. It's one of the funniest videos of all time, and one of the most hilarious things about the video is JT is sitting there looking at the guy,
yeah,
but not reacting at all. Like, his face does not move at all. He's screaming at him. The security guard's kind of laughing. He's like, yeah, let him have it.
Well, that's JT, right? Remember that puck that came into the bench,
oh,
and he just stood there, just sat. Nothing phases the guy, apparently.
One of the best screenshots of all time.
The
puck coming towards the bench. Everybody, I think this might have been Babcockian era.
I think it was.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Because everybody had hit the deck, including Babcock, and JT was sitting there ready to take it in the face. Sundin won. Lots of people were texting us about a Sundin shootout winner with the Canucks. It was his first game back in Toronto after he signed a one-year deal in the offseason. And left after he did not waive his no trade clause. So
yeah, that was
so
a
that
sticky
was
situation.
A stick one. Yeah.
Only 41 games with the Canucks, too. Like, going back and looking it up, it's just like, he didn't play long. It was just like a very brief period of time, and the most memorable moment from that is definitely coming back to Toronto, winning the game in a shootout, which I'm sure Leafs fans gave him a standing ovation, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, a lot going on around the league. We just had our pal CJ sitting here with us, and his phone was blowing up. So you can tell that there's a lot happening around the league when an insider is sitting next to you and his phone starts to blow up. What is it about the Columbus Blue Jackets, Luca? Why can't they ever have nice things?
Like, if you're Johnny Gaudreau, you just signed long-term
does
with this
care,
team.
Does he care, though? Like, did he even want to play on a winning team? Like, that's the thing I look at Johnny Gaudreau. He couldn't go on anywhere.
I know,
he went
it's
to Columbus.
True.
Did he even want to win? Is it's that a true. Mean thing to say?
I mean, it sucks that it came down to, as everyone says, like, the Devils and the Blue Jackets because of how well the Devils are
yes.
playing right now to start the season.
Imagine
and you imagine
him on that team?
Oh, my gosh. It's just, it's nuts. And he's having a good, like, he's having a decent year with Columbus. I don't know if he'll get to 100 points again, which was obvious going into the season because of who he was playing with, but I really feel bad for this franchise because Laine has already missed some part of the season, like he missed a few games, and now
good suit last night though.
Amazing suit last night. His suit game is number one on everyone's power rankings. But yeah, Zach Werenski, I feel like he's been having a really good year too. And now it's just like, where do you go if you're Columbus? Like, you're near the bottom of the standings, you're probably gonna get another top five pick. Columbus for Connor Bedard now? Like, is that the thing we're doing?
I don't know. So, yeah, that's the announcement. Columbus just announced Zach Werenski is done for the entire regular season. Torn labrum and a separated shoulder.
That's so tough.
Just terrible news. But I think they have more injuries than just that. Columbus is.
Yeah, like Voracek's day-to-day and a couple of other guys are out. Where are they in the standings? Last in the Metro. They have 8 points, which puts them tied with the Blues for the fewest amount of points, but Columbus has also played one more game. So,
yeah.
I mean, if you're betting on a team to tank for Connor Bedard, like, that'd be a good one. I mean,
sneaky pick?
Out of all the destinations that, like, you were thinking going into the season that Bedard could end up, if somehow the St. Louis Blues end up with the number one pick, which I don't think they will, and I think, I mean, Arizona's in a playoff spot right now, which is
I
wild.
I was just going to say that.
Just wild.
Isn't that hilarious?
What
these
is
wild card
this?
Teams. Arizona and Edmonton, just like everybody drew it up to start the year.
The West is kind of, like, bad, right?
Trash.
The West is ugly.
The West is trash.
The West is really trash.
Yeah, the only team in the West that scares people, well, Colorado, obviously.
And Vegas.
In Vegas, and that's it.
Like, because Edmonton's in shambles.
Edmonton's in shambles. The Flames are in shambles. The Flames are in shambles.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
7 in a row now that
they've
lost. Again
last night. That's terrible.
Goodness. But yeah, like, out of all the destinations that Connor Bedard could end up in, I mean, Columbus wouldn't be half bad. I would just embrace the tank now at this point.
I don't know. He's looking to go. He's looking for Bruce to stay as the head coach. Jimmy Rutherford to keep talking smack about him on the radio, everything to go downhill for the Canucks and get drafted to his hometown team.
That would be poetic for sure.
That's how I picture it going down.
That would be poetic for sure.
All right, we got some awards to hand out on the other side. The Leafies, as we hand out every week to the Leafs who have impressed us this week, the Leafs that haven't, and everything in between. We'll catch you on the other side. You're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050 and the iHeartRadio app.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here. Honor. Prestige. A celebration of...
The waitress tripped on the cord.
Presenting the Leafies. A celebration of Leafness.
What am I going to do with the award? Nothing. That's the least of my concerns right now.
On TSN 1050, the Leafs live here.
Leafs Lunch is brought to you by Vanilla Visa prepaid cards available at Petro Canada, the perfect gift for any occasion. For your chance to win a $100 Vanilla Visa prepaid card, text the keyword lunch and your name to 105050. So text the keyword lunch and your name to 105050. Standard text message rates apply. Welcome back to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Julie Desherry and Luca Celebre with you today from Scotiabank Arena. Al's brother is literally everywhere else today. He was on First Up. He's going to be on Gameplay. Actually, he's going to make an appearance at the end of the show to walk us through his school of degeneracy. But
he's everywhere.
The man is everywhere. He's in high demand. And so, too, are our very coveted Leafies, Luca. So every week we hand out these awards to deserving Maple Leafs. And this week, you know, we couldn't find anyone that really, really stirred the drink for the Dougie as a guy that stood out to the as the best player throughout this week of Leaf games. You know, weirdly enough, Dennis Mulligan was actually really good all week, and he looked deceptive and stood out. But we're going to skip the Dougie this week. We're going to go to the Sundin instead.
We're going to the Sundin. Okay, I'm just getting the concept down here, and the player who made a game-changing dynamic play. I like that. Hard to argue against Mitch Marner. He had a couple of those against Vegas. I mean, the individual effort was incredible. Saw, like, randomly Pat McAfee posted the goal on his Instagram account.
Really?
Yeah, he posted it, and I'm just like, I know he likes hockey, and, like,
just seems random.
It's super random, but he posted Marner's goal, that individual effort, on Instagram. But the pass to Timothy Liljegren was also incredible.
Like, I was just going to say, you could pick between either one of those plays, because those were definitely the two most satisfying to watch.
I will say, what about the pass to Tavares against Carolina? The one that he, like, dragged it behind between the legs, too. Because I watched that game, I had just my jaw dropped. Like, I was like, this is insane. Mitch Marner is just a wizard. So those are the ones that stick out for me.
Yeah, that was vintage JT Marner connection, a la 2018 or something to that effect. he's seems to have found his stride. He's playing with a swagger. And you know what? Chris Johnson, I think, thought the opposite. We didn't get a chance to dig into this with him. I think that Mitch Marner has found his swagger based on what we saw in that Carolina game and the Vegas game.
I think so, too.
It's actually Austin Matthews, and he's not playing badly. He doesn't look bad at all. He's Austin Matthews. But I think he might be missing just a little taste of the swag that we're used to seeing from him.
You know what? I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Maybe we'll
his shooting percentage is, like, so low, especially compared to his career, too. And it's just, like, it's going to bounce back, and that swagger will come. He just needs to see the puck go in the net a little more, but yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, the Carlisle Reimer, the just okay player. They want to hand this out to two guys, actually.
Okay.
And they're both going to be the guys who have had separate auditions on the top line. Michael Bunting and Alex Kerfoot. I thought Alex Kerfoot had a good game against Vegas. Some people thought he had a great game. I didn't think he stood out to me a ton. Stood out to the point where I thought to myself, oh, he's the guy that has to play on that first line, and that to me is kind of what Alex Kerfoot. Sheldon Keefe loves him because you can plug him in anywhere in your forward group, and he's just gonna chug away and do a good job. But I don't know if he's stirring the drink the way that Michael Bunting was. He was mostly stirring the pot on that top line. I don't know if he's doing it exactly the same way. So both of those guys have had the opportunity, and I just don't know that either have ran with it yet.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I know Bunting kind of came in out of nowhere last year, and it's one of those things where I feel like they're just still looking for that guy, because they started the season with Nick Ritchie on the first line last year, and then moved him down, and Michael Bunting came up, had a great year, and then it's been up and down to start this season, and now they're trying Kerfoot, and it's like, I feel like it's a good problem to have, I guess, where it's just like you're trying to find that guy to play with them, because you know Matthews and Marner are going to bring anyone up to their level. Exactly. But you want that consistency, and you want to just be able to be like, this is my first line every night. I don't have to worry about it. And the fact that you don't have that, it's not, I wouldn't say it's concerning, but you just want to have that nailed down, you know?
Yeah. Austin Matthews, we have the audio here of Austin Matthews talking about the difference between playing with Alex Kerfoot and playing with Michael Bunting. See if we have that one there. Chris, do you have a chance?
I mean, I don't know if it changes it too much. I think, you know, two different players, but both guys easy to play with, super smart. I mean, Kerf, you know, he's very versatile, so you can kind of count on him all over the ice, and it doesn't really matter, you know, what position, you know, we're in. I think, you know, just his IQ and everything, you know, really fills in good spots out there and gets into open space, and obviously his skating and his puck movement's really good as well.
What play from Mitch pops more for you on Tuesday night, his goal or his assist?
I mean, both were pretty special plays, obviously. I mean, those are, you know, not too many people making those plays. I thought his goal was awesome, but just the poise to have and the pump fakes and everything that kind of goes into it in that tight space. So I'd probably put that.
The Wendell is an interesting one this week, and I know some of our listeners might hate this, but Justin Hall has been through a lot lately, from the booing to the terrible giveaways, but he's found his form next to TJ Brody, as people generally tend to when they're playing next to TJ Brody. He had 4 blocks against Boston, another block against Vegas, and he was a +3 against Carolina. So if we're going to dump on Justin Hall when he's having a really tough stretch, I think it's only fair to give him some cred when he has a good stretch. He showed some serious heart and soul throughout this past week. He could have crumpled, Luca. Like, it would have been easy to just crumple and have just to keep going on the path he was on. A lot of people, myself included, thought he needed one night in the press box to maybe reset before he can get back in action, and he put it back on the rails.
That's so important for this team, too, especially because when you're looking at their defensive core, it's just like they haven't made a lot of moves, so to speak, and so he is still a mainstay on that blue line. Like, he needs to contribute, and it's not just playing 5-on-5. He's a main penalty killer for this team. Like, his role is so important. And the fact that, you're right, he definitely could have, I mean, we've seen this team do that a lot of the times, right?
When, crumple, yes.
When that pressure gets to them. And so, especially this early in the season when it was like the sky is falling and everything is bad, for him to be that stabilizing presence and with that new pair, it makes everyone feel better back there, including Eric Schallgren, who's now had to be the number one goalie for this team.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, it leads us perfectly into the Vibe, the underrated player.
Well, you just mentioned him.
Yeah.
TJ Brody.
TJ Brody. And AB and I were kind of having this conversation, and maybe it's more glaring now that Jake Muzzin is in the lineup. How vital and pivotal is TJ Brody as a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Picture, like, take TJ Brody out of the lineup right now, and what does that blue line look like to you?
It looks...
death and demise and scary. Does not look good.
Those are all good words to describe
it. It looks scary. TJ Brody is, I've used the term straw that stirs the drink. He's the glue that holds the Leafs blue line together, especially with Jake Muzzin out right now. We joke sometimes, we don't joke, but sometimes we say we appreciate Jake Muzzin more when he's not in the lineup than when he actually is, because he has gaps, and he had a pretty tough regular season last year, mm-hmm. and was off to a little bit of a rough start to the season as well, but such a good playoffs last year, and usually a consistent blue liner for them, and obviously one of their mainstay guys. But picture taking Brody out of the lineup right now. I don't know what this roster looks like without him. So he's going to get the underrated player. I thought Cheryl Pounder spoke really well on him on the broadcast, calling him a security blanket. I don't know if you have that on you.
Yeah, you know, I think that Justin Hall's game has really stabilized since being put with Brody, and Brodes has that ability, it seems, to really help his partner. Usually spend less time in the defensive side of the red line, and they kill plays quicker. He very rarely puts his partner in bad spots, and if his partner puts TJ in a bad spot, he does a good job of cleaning it up. So that's really helped there, and that's been important for us.
J. Brody's able to elevate guys, and he does that so constantly. The O-Dog. This is one of our favorites. The best quote. A lot of twin talk lately with the Sedins going into the Hall of Fame. Austin Matthews asked if he had a twin as a teammate, and this is what he had to say. That's okay if we don't have the audio right now. He was joking about it, but weirdly enough, we were watching Morning Skate, and Alex Kerfoot was kind of looking like an Austin Matthews doppelganger out there with the mustache happening.
Yeah, you pointed that out, and I don't know if I've seen what
I don't even Kerfoot know if they look like. Alike at all, but they don't wear numbers or anything, obviously, at a Morning Skate, and I had to do a little bit of a double take. I was like, where is that mustache coming from?
It's really funny. Kerfoot's full of surprises. He plays everywhere. He comes out one day looking like Austin Matthews, another day he's clean-shaven. It's just, you never know what you're going to get with Alex Kerfoot.
You never do. You never do know. I know that on the other side, we'll keep digging into this Pens-Leaf game. Tonight, you can check that game out on TSN4 or listen to it on TSN 1050. But for now, you're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050 and the iHeartRadio app.